Welcome to the Boomer Woman's podcast, where we are embracing the journey. I'm your host, Agnes Knowles. There are some conversations many of us know we should have, yet we keep putting them off. Perhaps it's because they feel uncomfortable, or maybe because we hope we'll have plenty of time later. Today's conversation gently invites us into one of those places. You may think this episode is about medical assistance in dying. In some ways, it is. But much more than that, it's about being a daughter, being a caregiver, and discovering how to love someone well during the final chapter of their life. My guest shares the deeply personal experience of walking beside her mother through the final 86 days before her death. Together, we talk about anticipatory grief, difficult family conversations, the wisdom of nature, and the remarkable peace that can come when we stop trying to fix everything and simply become present. Whether you've already walked this road, or you're on it now, or you know it's somewhere ahead, I think you'll find compassion, hope, and practical wisdom in what you're about to hear. And perhaps by the end of our conversation, you'll feel just a little more prepared to have some of the conversations that matter most. Listen now to my conversation with Teresa Evans. Many of us have cared for aging parents. Some of us have sat beside hospital beds, navigated difficult medical decisions, or watched someone we love live with illness longer than they wished. And increasingly, families are finding themselves having conversations about medical assistance in dying, MAID. Conversations that can be emotional, complicated, and deeply personal. My guest today brings a unique perspective to this topic. As an ICU nurse, she spent years supporting patients and families through death and dying. But when her own mother chose MAID after years of living with end-stage heart failure and COPD, she experienced the journey not as a healthcare professional, but as a daughter. What followed became the inspiration for her book, Choosing to Die, a thoughtful exploration of anticipatory grief, caregiving, family relationships, and the emotional landscape that unfolds when a loved one chooses the timing of their death. Through the lens of her mother's beloved garden, she reflects on the natural cycles of life, death, love, and letting go. Teresa Evans, welcome to the Boomer Woman's podcast, where we are embracing the journey.
Thank you, Agnes. I'm happy to be here.
I'm looking forward to this conversation. As we talked about before I clicked record, I've got a tiny bit of experience with what you've gone through. Now, you spent years as an ICU nurse supporting people at the end of life. How did that experience shape your understanding of death before your mother's decision?
Well, I think as a nurse, we are around death on a regular basis. And so we the more familiar we become with something, the less fear there is around it. And the more people I was with that were dying, the more I realized it's a natural part of living. And I also saw what can happen when there hasn't been any conversations or any planning in place. And I hate to say a bad death, but a more complicated death that actually a lot of times the focus would be lost on the person that was dying and shift more to family members who were coping with their grief in not so useful ways, I guess I would say. So I was the one who brought up MAID with my mom. I had seen her struggling and suffering for a good long while, and I knew as a nurse that we had tried every conventional and unconventional treatment that might bring her some peace, and it wasn't happening. And I said, "You know, Mom, you live in a country where you have a choice, and I just need you to know that I support that choice. I will support you whatever you decide." So that's how the conversation began.
When she actually chose MAID, what were your thoughts? Because now it is a real thing, not a concept.
Exactly.
As a daughter,
I
What
thought
was
my
your
sisters are going to kill me for bringing this up. But they were, it's almost like I feel like I went through the process in some ways with a split personality. There was the half of me that was the daughter whose heart was breaking quietly inside, knowing that my mom was going to be gone. And then there was the nurse and the compassionate human being who just wanted to see this person not be suffering anymore. And one of the things I talk about a lot with the book is that how my sisters and I'm so grateful to them and for all of us together that we were able to shift all of our focus to mom and turning this into a celebration of her life, into helping her complete anything that needed to be completed, and that while we were carrying our own strong emotions about her leaving, we were able to separate that and not let that spill all over the experience while mom was still with us.
I don't want to make light, but you do on occasion. I'm thinking of Golden Girls, where the conversation comes up of like when you're gone, all these people are going to miss you. But to have that date, which usually we don't know, become tangible, and to have all those people express their love and respect and enjoyment and celebration of you. Did that happen? Because that's such a gift.
Yes, I mean, it is. I mean, that was the crazy thing to know the exact date and time that your mother is going to die. If, I mean, there was a part of me that wondered if she might die before that date. And she had set that date 86 days in advance, is sort of when she decided to die. And she asked me, she's like, when should I do it? And I said, I don't know, Mom. I said, why don't you die on your birthday? Go out on the same day that you came in. And so she did. She died on her 80th birthday at 10 o'clock in the morning. And she was very open-minded, and we listened to a lot of Alan Watts and different philosophers. She was Catholic, so this was a major decision for her because, of course, the Catholic Church does not support this choice. But as I say in the book, she said, man's interventions are keeping me alive, and man's interventions will end this suffering. My relationship with God is solid. I have prayed on this. I have no qualms about what this choice that I've made. And she never wavered in her choice. I moved in with her and lived with her for 3 months, and she never wavered in her choice, even when we might have wavered a little bit.
Yeah, no, I'm sure.
She never did.
I'm going to admit that my heart just did a skipped a beat because 80 now is not very old.
But it's different for all of us, right? I mean, my husband, I mean, I'm, yeah, 80. I mean, I'm helping an 80-year-old gentleman right now go through his house, and he's active. I mean, he's taking care of a huge garden, and he's not anywhere close to ending his life. But my mom, 80, she had always had health issues, I think, her entire life. Part of it was just she had a very complicated childhood, in and out of different foster homes, lack of good nutrition. I mean, just the basic building blocks that would give one a healthy physical body. A lot of times she missed out on those. And so she was not a young, virile 80-year-old. Yeah, she had a major heart attack at the age of 60. And that was sort of, yeah. I mean, I'm 6 years older than that. Now, I remember when I turned 16, I thought, God, this was sort of the beginning of mom's ending. And I feel like I don't feel any different than I did when I was 40 or 30.
Well, and thank you, Mom, for giving you the building blocks she didn't have.
Exactly. Exactly.
Now, you said it was 86 days out. Are there any moments in that 86-day period from the decision to the time that sort of strike you as memorable or that were a surprise or?
Oh my God. Every single moment of that 86 days was, I say, I didn't want to miss one moment of it. I mean, I knew, as you, we had this countdown, and I had a complicated relationship with my mom when, I mean, I left home young. I moved to another country. I said, not only did I leave home, I moved to another country. But we had consciously healed that over all of our years of living. And I wanted to be present for every moment of it. So, I mean, I'm trying to think if there's anything in particular that stands out. We did, every moment felt significant. I don't know if that sounds trite or not,
Yeah,
but every
no.
single moment felt significant. And I remember just thinking, like, when I would look at, you talk to people and you look at them, but when I would talk to my mom, I would look at her eyes and I'd be like, I'm not going to be able to look her. I'm thinking inside, I'm not going to be able to look at her eyes in 40 more days. I want to soak in her eyes. I want that. I want to imprint her eyes in my heart so that they're, so it was the most present I think I've ever been in my life for anything.
It sounds to me almost like the opposite. I had a bit of a cancer scare when I was in my 50s, maybe, which turned out to be non-existent. But I can remember it was in the spring and watching a flower bloom and wonder, is this the last time I will see a flower bloom? Is this my last spring? And it sounds like the same, only different, like with looking at your mom and the expressions and I'm sure some of the phrases that mums have and things like that. So, yeah.
And my mom was, she was a master gardener. And so the book is written through the lens of botany. When I went to stay with her, she had a beautiful flower garden that she had been able to get out there in the spring because she had planted some new plants and stuff. But I arrived there in July and mid-July, and she asked me if I would put her garden to rest for the season because she wasn't able to do it. So it didn't take long before I was like, okay, everything that I'm witnessing in this garden is what we're witnessing in the house with mom. Integration and disintegration. You can't have one without the other. Nature is a giant metaphor for what we're living with mom. And so the garden became a real healing spot for me as I was there. And when I wrote the book, I, as a tribute to my mom's passion for gardening and her love of gardening, I decided, and as it served as its own healing, that nature was was such a healing balm for me, I decided to write the book through the lens of botany. And I made a list of all of mom's perennials, and each chapter focuses on a different perennial. And I weave together the story of what was happening with that perennial with what was happening with mom at that moment. So
I want to get into the garden in the book, but this might be a good time to quote you. You say, "We are quick to talk about the miracle of life when an infant enters this world. I believe the miracle of death carries the same weight and mystery." Can you just go there for a moment?
well, if we can separate our strong emotional response to somebody leaving their physical body and actually, I mean, or even sink into that strong emotional response. How often do we feel that intensity of emotion? It is not very many times in our life. And I do think it, I don't think of it as an ending. And I think maybe that is the difference. I think of it as a new beginning. I think of it as a transformation. I found that when people, the most I saw when people were very afraid with dying was when they felt like it was an end. the end.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can't even think of the end. I don't even have a concept of what the end is. Because to me, we're just constantly evolving, even out of our physical bodies. So to be present for somebody, how many times do we get to die in our life? One time, right? We get to be born one time that we're aware of in this life, this current life, and we get to die one time. And so to be present when somebody is making this incredible journey, and none of us knows what it is. I don't care if you've had a near-death experience, is a near-death experience. You're not dead. You may be near death, but you're not dead because you're still telling us about it. So none of us know. But energetically, to be in the presence of somebody when they're dying, I just found it, I always found it to be such a moment that was full of the mysteries, full of the divine mystery. And I mean, I've never been with anybody having a violent death, so that might be a different experience for somebody. But you know, I had to put my dog to sleep last year that I, you know, loved to bits. And Ed, this was after mom, right? So it was completely different for me because when I went into the vet, I knew it was time. There was no question about that. But when I left the vet, my heart felt like it was going to crack in half. I mean, I had that feeling. And rather than trying to rush through that feeling, I was just like, feel this, Teresa. Feel the depth of the love and the relationship that you and Lucy had together. And I was in no rush to get rid of it because I knew the longer we live, right? And the more we go through these experiences, we realize that they're not going to crack us in half. We will come out on the other side. Probably if we can let ourselves with more wisdom and more awareness than we had going in. So.
My grandson, my oldest grandson, was born maybe 6 months before my mother died. And my mother was already in care. She had advanced dementia. And I told him the story from time to time that my mother loved him to bits because my mother had lost her words. So basically, she spoke the same language as the baby. She could make noises, and it all worked for him. And so he's very aware of this very brief relationship that he does not remember having with his great grandmother. But I keep on, once in a while, because he's a 16-year-old, I can throw a comment at him and I say, well, your great grandmother would have said. And so every time now that my mother comes out of my grandson's mouth, I just laugh and I roll my eyes and I say, Mom, you're gonna live
Yes,
forever.
exactly.
Yeah, so yeah, it's interesting. Okay,
I
so
just
let
think, oh, I'm sorry. I was
no,
just
yeah,
going to
no,
say,
you go ahead.
I hope, you know, one of my biggest hopes for the book, and I feel like as I talk about it, I see that this is happening, is that we start to change our perspective on death, and we start to look at it as this miraculous transformation that, yes, we're going to feel grief. Yes, we're going to feel sadness. Yes, we have to go through that mourning. But there's still also the mystery and the beauty and, you know, of and the of what it is that's going on when somebody is leaving. And I just heard from I just had my official book launch last week, and there was a gal that attended via Zoom from Saudi Arabia. And she wrote me. So there's, you know, I mean, there's all kinds of different cultural beliefs around death and stuff too. But she wrote me back and she said, it was so painful for me when my mother died. And after listening to the way you talk about death, I realized that I've been shoving this down, you know, for all these years because it was so painful. Instead of letting myself honor and feel the depth of the relationship and love that I have for my mom, which is reflected in these strong emotions. And that to me was like, okay, That's the feedback that fills me up.
That one comment sort of makes the whole book worthwhile.
Exactly.
Now, in my own background, and definitely in your background, and I don't want to sound crass, but do you remember moments when the last breath was taken, the body had finished of, and we're talking about like patients now, probably more than our own family, but that relief of no more pain, no more, well, just pain, I guess.
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. And it's palpable almost, right? That sense is palpable. I called somebody in once, a daughter whose father, and he was, I think he may have even been in his 90s. I'm not sure. And this was like 25 years ago when 90 had a different meaning than it does today, even, right? But I called her and I said, I'm pretty sure that your father is probably not going to last through the night if you want to come in and, sit with him or be with him. And she came over and she was, I said, I looked at her and I wasn't even thinking, and I said, "Oh my God, you're so lucky that you get to be here for this. I'm so glad you were up here," because she was visiting in the area where we were. And she said, "Really?" And I could just hear, the panic in her voice. And I said, I said, "I'll stay in there with you if you want." I said, "It's not that scary." I said, "And you don't have to do any, all you have to do is witness. That's all we have to do, is witness." And she was so glad that she was there for that. And my mother happened to be someone who actually assisted a lot of people leaving their bodies. She just happened to be there a lot in her life when people were dying. She did work some as a nurse's aide, so she was in long-term care, but even other people. And she would feel it. I mean, she had moments where she actually felt the energy like go right through her arms and out of her. And you can feel once you're with somebody, and I don't know if this is your experience, but you can feel too how the body is really just the vessel. Once whatever it is that's given us life, the soul, whatever we want to, whatever our belief is that we call that, but once that energy leaves, the body is truly just the vessel that carried the essence of of life. And it's so clear, so clear.
I can remember going in to see a client one morning, and yes, it was my work, but I listened to her. They had got her up, and I went, called the nurse right away and said, "Well, what's your opinion? Because I think we're final stages here." And making eye contact with the client, and she was one of those women that she was a lady. Like she was always perfectly put together. And so whoever had been with her the night before had put her hair in rollers because she
Oh,
needed to look nice.
yeah.
And I looked at the nurse and I looked at my client and I said, "We're good here." And I'm whipping out those rollers and I'm trying to put her hair so the way she would have wanted it. And
Yeah.
when it was done, I could just tell by the look in her eyes as the breathing is so difficult for her, that when they put her, lay her in her bed, that it was just like I held her hand and it was like, okay, like she could go now because she was perfectly coiffed. She was
Yes,
wearing
yes.
clothes, not a nightgown, you know.
Yes.
So yeah, it's an interesting process. Let's go back to the garden. You were in the garden doing as your mother requested. At what stage did you realize that this was helping you process and there was a metaphor happening?
Oh my gosh, soon. I mean, right early on, it was that close to the end of July, so that's where, things start transitioning a little bit and starting to prepare for fall. And I just remember, I mean, some leaves had fallen off the tree early, and I was just looking around and I was like, I mean, blooms are starting to fade on some plants, and as I was noticing those, that noticing was when I was just like, oh, this is what mom's going through right now. We could say that the bloom that has been mom is starting to fade. It's time for her to drop her petals and go for a nice long sleep. And then I started, I mean, I would look at the leaf of a plant, and I would look at the primary vein and the secondary veins that delivered the nutrients, and I'd look at my own hand or I'd look at my mom's hands and I would think it's the same, and I really, to the point where I was thinking, God, I wonder if plants have high blood pressure. I wonder if they, I like I there wasn't anything that I couldn't relate to botany. And I think because I have such a respect for nature that nature knows what it's doing. We don't have to interfere. That I thought, okay, and this is what's happening in the house also. Although that being said, we have created a medical model that is so focused on extending life, even when that extension can create more harm than good, that I mean, ideally, do we want, do we, would I have loved mom to just drop her petals and die on her own? Absolutely. But she was wrapped up in this medical system that, and taking so many medications that were some helping and I think some hurting. And how do we stop this? And so we had to rely on a system like MAID to help us end this man-made cycle that was creating so much suffering. I don't know if that's, if I said that clearly.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I'm going to come back to the garden, but you just reminded me that I used to have a neighbor who was a maid nurse. And when I asked this person to come on podcast and discuss it, because I think it's such an important subject from so many angles, this person refused because of all the different viewpoints. Was there pushback in your life?
There is now that I'm speaking about it and writing the, I've
Okay.
written the book because I'm really talking about it. There wasn't then because, and mom decided that at first, she really didn't want anybody to know. And it wasn't because she was ashamed. She felt like she was making an immoral decision. She was simply too tired to have to explain it to everybody. She just didn't have the energy for that. Now, so not a lot of people knew. I mean, her daughters knew. She didn't want her grandchildren to know because she didn't know if they'd understand, but they ended up knowing and they ended up understanding. I have one nephew, or yeah, my brother's son who didn't know, and my brother had died 4 years before that. My youngest brother, he was an addict and struggled with addiction, and mom just felt like it would be too painful for Walker to know that after. And I don't know that it would have been or not. He knows now, of course, but so we didn't have a lot of pushback at the time because there was nobody that knew to push back. Now I'm dealing with this now as I talk about the book and I talk about MAID more, and I'm involved with organizations that are trying to get MAID legalized over here in the United States, where it's only legal in a very in a restrictive way in 14 states. And the biggest opponent is, only God can give life and only God can take life away. And I mean, if that's true, should we be doing heart transplants?
I was
Should
just
we
going
be
to say.
taking antibiotics? Should we be, having open heart surgery? So For me, I don't think we get to cherry pick what God gave us and what God didn't give us. And I try to be very respectful of everybody's opinion, but I have a very low tolerance for just angry, religious-based
Well, as you say, they're
comments.
cherry picking the pieces of religion that they think apply or that they've heard about without looking big picture. Yeah, because my first thought as you were saying now is like, okay, only God can give life. Then why are we doing all these interventions to keep people longer? And, when they would normally have passed, even not pleasantly, but, it's.
It wasn't too long ago, maybe 3 months ago, that I read that we have now come up with a new technology where they will be able to keep a fetus alive outside of the womb. So I don't know all the details of it, but I just thought, why? Why would we do this? And if we don't think that's interfering with God's plan, I mean, I and who and what two people in the world are going to be able to afford that? How do we decide who gets to use that intervention and who doesn't? It's very complicated, isn't it? We know it's complicated. Again, in an ideal, I prayed that my mom would die before we did MAID. I was totally on board and prepared, but there was part of me that was just like, you can go, Mom. And I told her this, anytime. And there might have been, I mean, she might have been feeling this way too. We want to honor the natural cycle of life and death, but we are so far beyond that with our medical model that we've had to come up with other solutions. And MAID, I think, is a very peaceful, dignified solution for a lot of people. And if it's not a solution for you, don't choose it. It's that simple. Just don't choose it.
I think your key word there, and I want to emphasize it, is we should. I mean, we all talk about, I just want to go to sleep at night and not wake up in the morning. That is not the reality for many people. But
Most
to
people.
have that peaceful passing, because I've seen it, you've definitely seen it, where people are fighting for breath. Or are in such pain that the meds just you're trying to chase it, but you're not getting there, and to have that peaceful passing at the end, I mean, to me, that's a gift.
And I mean, thank God we have hospice and we have palliative care, but I know from working as a nurse, I know from what I read all the time that there are still people that are continuing to suffer even with the interventions of hospice and palliative care. Not everybody can be relieved of their pain. And not every doctor treats every person the same. And I mean, some doctors are easy to give pain medication and sedative. Some doctors are not so, right? I mean, there are so many factors involved. It's complicated. And as I said to one person that was really, again, sort of a hard line religious stance on it, and I just said, you know what? I said, honestly, when it comes right down to it, we're all spirits walking around in these human bodies trying to figure it out and do our best. And that's kind of the way I feel. I mean, Mom did her best based on all the information that she had and the choices that were in front of her. She made a choice based on her best decision with the information she had. And we showed up to honor that. And that's what it comes down to.
Well, and I want to have you back and we can go deep into medical ethics, but we won't do that right now. Okay, so you have a lot of experience. You're now in the garden and seeing the parallels, I suppose. Was there ever a change in perspective on death or grief because of the garden, or was it, did it just reinforce?
I think it just re really reinforced what what was going on, and I mean, it was a place, it was a safe place for me to really feel the depth of the anticipatory grief that I was carrying, and I know for my sisters too. And of course, we wanted mom knew that we were that we were carrying this, but again, we were very careful not to. I write about this a lot in the book, that I think a lot of times when somebody is dying, they show we turn it we make it about us, and instead of the person who's dying. And if we can take away nothing else from the book, but just to go, hang on. I mean, yes, it's about me. I'm part of this, but really, what is the most important thing? It's the person who's leaving. How can I facilitate that? And I guess, again, back to the garden, I knew that mom had such a strong connection to nature and to the garden and fossil hunting and rock collecting. And she gave that to all of us, that gift. And so it was just so vividly being reflected back to me when I was in the garden that it just helped me accept what was happening with mom.
We've talked, and you've talked about the parallels of nature. And you reminded me of a show that I watched recently where a baby deer had been brought in because it was left by the mother. The mother had just deserted it. And when the vet came in, he said, "The baby has this issue, this issue, this issue, this issue." The mother knew that it could not be raised into deerhood. It would
Yes.
quickly become a victim, a prey. So you talk about the plants. There's so many, times in what's the word, animal nature, that nature understands that
Exactly.
there is a time and a season.
Exactly.
What are we missing as humans?
I don't know. I think that we have, we have decided that. I just think because we've been able to create some of this technology, that we've made ourselves to be the God of everything. I mean, fix it. There's always a fix, but sometimes we don't need to fix it. Sometimes we just need to let it be. And it's heartbreaking, isn't it? I mean, I hit a rabbit one day with my car and I thought I was actually going to throw up. I just felt so much just, and, but why did I even bring that up? I just think we need to have some humility. We need to have some humility and we need to step back and we need to go, okay. I mean, look what's nature has been forever changed because of technology. And now we're trying to create the effects of that or fix the effects of that. For those of us that think that there are some effects due to that, I mean, and that's the other quandary that we're in. Half of us think that there are, and half of us think that there aren't. So we're just, I mean, it's just becoming more and more confusing and complicated. And I just think if we turn ourselves back to nature, which is right in front of us, and if we don't think nature wins, then you've never been in a big storm. You've never been in a tornado. You've never been in a hurricane. You've never been and experienced a tsunami. Nature always wins. I mean, we can make workarounds for the rest of our lives, but in the end, nature is going to win. And so I think, oh my God, we could talk for years about this, right? Like, get back to nature. Look outside. Look at how an ant, look at how a plant, look at how the whole last the whole the book is broken into three sections, and the last section of the book focuses on a maple tree, a giant maple tree that was in mom's backyard. And I had no idea about the complexity of maple trees and how intrinsically they have so many. First of all, a maple tree isn't even considered mature until it's 70 to 100 years old. It's
Wow.
still in its infancy, right? It's still considered a toddler.
Me
And
too.
if a
Yay,
maple
thank you for
tree,
that information.
if a maple tree thinks that it's going to die, then that season before, it will throw out hundreds, thousands more panicles or seeds than it normally would in an effort to keep the species going. I mean, just all of this timing, all of these things that are happening, but they're not, they're happening intrinsically because they're part of the divine, I would say the divine design. And I don't know if I have the wisdom, the experience, the right to have this conversation. Have I lived enough? Am I smart enough? Have I experienced enough? But, how does the divine design show up in a human life these days? What does that look like? Wow, we are really okay, Agnes. You are taking me to but I will say that these are the conversations I love. I mean, if you would ask me, why am I here? I'm here to hopefully leave as a lighter and brighter human being and individual, and to leave the earth lighter and brighter than when I got here. And that requires thinking outside of the box, thinking this way, always questioning. I mean, my husband's always like, if I get comfortable, then something's wrong. If I get too comfortable, then I'm like, I'm missing something. There's something here that I'm missing. Let's start digging. And that's with my mom. I learned that from my mom.
Here we
She was
go.
curious to the very end.
There you go. Because when you
Yeah.
look up and go, Mom, you're gonna live forever.
Oh, yeah. She's with me. I mean, every time before I get on a podcast, I have a little chat with her and I'm like, help me choose the right words, mom. We're doing this together. In some ways, I'm closer to my mom than I've ever been in my life because I just feel her all the time. Because all of my time these days is spent promoting the book and talking about the book. So.
Okay, so one more comment about your mom. She made a choice.
Yep.
Can you go into the realm of autonomy, dignity, and quality of life?
Well, yeah, I mean, so she was losing all of those three realms, those three things rapidly. And that's when I had to remind her that she had a choice. And I mean, nobody, she didn't want to die. She just couldn't carry that much sensation, that much suffering anymore. I didn't want my mother to die, but I could hardly stand watching her suffer that much. And so I think, I mean, we say that autonomy, we say that dignity is a fundamental right. And yet we oftentimes that is taken away insidiously without us even realizing it. And so there was no choice for me other than the choice to support what my mother needed to feel that she had autonomy, and dignity and the ability to choose how she would maintain that for herself. If
Yeah.
she had said to me, "I want to continue every medical intervention known to man," I would have shown up for her. It would have been harder for me, but I would have shown up for her the same. But that's not the choice she made. And so the person that chooses, "I want the ventilator until the very end." I mean, I've been with many people who chose this, right? That's their choice. It's not my choice to judge their choice. It's my choice in the capacity that I'm in at that time to show up and support that. If you're going to be on a ventilator for a good long while, then I'm going to do my best to make sure you're as comfortable as you can be on that ventilator. If you decide that that's not for you and made or a different op choices for you, then I'm going to show up for you the best that I can and make sure that that happens as peacefully as possible for you also.
Okay, we have a listener out there who's dealing with a loved one's decision. Do you have any tips? Sounds just so trite, but any thoughts, I guess, how they can hold space for both their own grief and their loved one's wishes?
I
They
think,
don't have your experience.
yeah, so I think that to know that you can't get away from your own grief, all right? You have to feel that and you have to experience it. But you don't have to spill that all over the person that's leaving. So find a way to be able to feel what you need to feel. Maybe you have to. If for me, I was living with my mom so I could go out to the garden. I went on a fossil hunt. When I needed time to be able to just let the tears flow and, literally feel my nervous system shake at what was happening, I made that time, but not around my mother. And all we have to do is just show up as a witness. There's nothing to fix. We just have to show up. And, there was a gentleman that had posted something that his sister was choosing maid. She was in her 40s. So, of course, we think, oh, 40s. But she had what I felt like, well, that seems like a reasonable choice to me with what's going on for her. But again, that was my choice. And he said he just couldn't understand. And therefore, he didn't know how he could support her. And immediately, all of us that were part of this discussion were like, you don't have to understand. That's not important. You just have to show up. Because when the person that you love is gone, you want to know that you added to that moment. You weren't taking away from it. So find your support system. Whatever that is, take the time that you need to feel. Try to do that separately so that it doesn't become that the person who's leaving feels like they have to take care of you. They've got their hands full. They've got their job. Their job is leaving. And I think there's a lot of things that go on that we have no idea about that are going on during that time. So just don't add to their job.
The two thoughts that come to mind there are, I don't know how many times I've said at the end of this, as difficult as this is right now, is you will live with no regrets
Oh.
because you supported that person.
Yeah.
You gave everything you were capable of giving to get
Yeah.
them through.
Yeah.
The other thought as you were talking is, I'm sure many of us have been to the funeral where the person who is left behind, the grieving, whatever, has to carry the weight of all the people that come and sob on their shoulders.
Exactly.
And it's like, oh my goodness, like who's the one that's suffering most here right now and needs supporting? They should not be the supporter, they should be the supported.
And when that is such a, I've never heard somebody, that is what I was saying. I love that analogy because I think most people can relate to that. If they haven't been around somebody, I mean, most of us, unless we're really young, have experienced a loss of somebody or, and it's true. And I'm just so glad that I turned 60 when I was with mom because had I been 25, I might not have had this awareness, right? And so it's, yes, that was beautiful. I love the way you said that. I'm going to use that, Agnes.
Oh dear. Is there any emotions that families shouldn't expect if they're
You're going to have the whole gamut, and you're going to question. Because again, I think it's not natural, but we're not dealing with a natural healthcare system. So we had to, again, I mean, I talk about it in the book. There's several times where I was like, oh my God, my mom's out in the garden tonight. Wouldn't it be amazing if she could just drop over and die right now? It would be, in a place that she loves, doing what she loved. But that just wasn't the way it was going to be. And so, know that you're gonna feel every emotion, and sometimes you even laugh. I mean, we had moments of levity in the midst of all this too, right? So just be prepared for all of it. There were moments where I physically thought I'm like, is it physically possible for a heart to crack into two pieces and you can still keep breathing? That's the depth of the feeling of the ache of what I was carrying. And yet, right away, again, it's almost like I said, I like there was two of me, that other me said, it's a feeling, it's a sensation that tells you how much you love your mother and the gravitas of this circumstance. And you can do both. You can feel this. And you can show up for your mother. And my youngest sister said, I never thought one of the best days of my life would be the day my mother died. But it was such, we turned it, it was such a beautiful, peaceful, ceremonial. I mean, we had a birthday party for her, it was her birthday.
Oh, of course.
We had decorated her room. We had an altar set up in there. She was wearing a wreath of flowers on her head. We walked into her room and she crawled into bed, and then my two sisters and I crawled into bed with her, and we just surrounded her like we were kittens with a mother cat. And she wanted George Harrison, My Sweet Lord,
Oh my
playing,
goodness, yeah.
and we had lavender scenting in the room, and it was so peaceful. And then the other thing too is that we laid with mom for a long time. I don't even remember the doctor leaving. I mean, he was so quiet, and everything was so quiet, and we none of us, I mean, I think we were all probably had tears, but again, there was no, it, we were all very quiet. And I say in the book, mom asked us, if you girls feel like you're gonna fall apart, please leave so I don't have to take care of you, right?
Yeah,
And I say, but we didn't fall apart. Instead, we fell into the mystery of what was happening. And we just held that. Yeah. So all I think for all three of us, we look at that as a moment of magic that we were able to be there and hold mom the way we did and be with her when she left her body.
I'm glad you added the part about levity. My mom passed early in the morning, so I got the phone call. I set up a right over and I phoned my brother, and he showed up shortly thereafter. And nobody came to take my mother's body away for approximately 6 hours. So she was in care. So my brother and I, of course, were upset. But you get used to it. You get used to the fact that your mother Your mother has left this body, and it did become lighter. And my mother or my brother and I have a pretty lighthearted relationship. We're very close. My mom and I had always, she had an English sense of humor, you know what I mean? And, so my brother and I are carrying on. Oh, mom, listen to this one. You're going to love this one. And it was by the time they took her away, I was really appreciative of those hours.
Exactly.
You know, because
Yeah. I think we do a disservice when we sweep the body away right away. I mean, for some families or some people, it's just they really choose it. It's just they can't be there for that. But I think a lot of us don't realize that we can request to stay with our person. And I think more deaths are starting to happen at home because of hospice, because of palliative care, because of MAID. I don't know the statistic, but I looked it up recently and I was pleasantly surprised that it's turning around. And so, I mean, that's how it used to be, right? Grandma died and she was in the parlor for 3 days. And we all, we drank beer and we danced. The night that the day that mom died, we had our own version of an Irish wake. Mom was Irish, so my sisters and I, we went into her closet. We decided we had to wear mom's clothes to the wake, and we tried on every single thing in mom's closet. I mean, we had clothes strewn all over the place until we had our perfect mom outfits on and we danced. I mean, we started off, mom was, again, the rosary was a very sacred, special thing for mom. And so we started our wake saying the rosary together and, honoring her that way. But then we just, it was a grand celebration. We were still basking in the glow of how beautiful mom's leaving was, and we all still have our mom outfits and
Yeah. Well, and it's funny too because you're not joyous in her death. You're joyous in her life.
exactly, and her freedom from suffering from both of, yes, exactly. I mean, that we got to have that we chose this person to be our mother. In some way, and we did our best and we showed up for her. And I mean, there was a moment in very early on when I got there where, and again, I hadn't lived with my mom since I was 14 years old, so it had been many, many years. And where there was a kind of intense, like, and I think it was just, it is a huge thing. And I thought, oh my God, I don't know. I think I have to, I think I should. This is why I left the first time. Why am I here? Right. But then I thought, yeah, Teresa, you can leave, but you're not 14 anymore. And you're 59 now. And your mother's gonna be gone. And is this, I mean, you can make that choice. But is this really what you want? And how are you gonna feel about that in a year or 10 years or 20 years? And I'm like, no, it's worth staying. And I think sometimes for the person that called in, if you have other people that are also feeling a lot of intense emotions, I know, I mean, with my sisters and I, we just erupted all over each other. And then, I texted them and I said, okay, you guys, like, is this really what we want? Is this we is this what is this how we want this to go? And I and we were all like, no. We were all, our hearts were breaking. And I said, I think we should come back together. And I don't think we should use words because words are not our words. We can't, we, words are not our friend right now. We just need to come together and we need to hold each other. And we did that. We all came back together and we wrapped our arms around each other and we held each other and we felt the. We felt each other's pain and sadness and love and all of the complexity. And it was in that moment that we sort of made a silent contract that we were going to show up for mom and we were going to show up for each other. And that just set the tone for the whole rest of the time together. So sometimes words aren't our friend. Sometimes we need to just let ourselves feel.
The reason I wear glasses is because nobody can see me crying with you.
I mean, see, when like I have water coming out of my eyes right now too, but I love these moments because they remind me of just the gift of what that experience was that I carry now. I'm not the same person that I was.
That's going to be a really good segue because I want to go to women in the audience right now who know this is in their future. Maybe they are becoming a caregiver. Maybe they are currently a caregiver. What do you say to them?
Be present for the moment. You can do this. You can show up. You can do these hard things. You can do more than you think you can do, and not only just show up, but show up and add to the situation. Trust that you've got what it takes. And when doubt creeps in, or when the feelings start to feel overwhelming, figure out, and maybe think about this now, what are you going to do to prepare yourself for this inevitable future? I mean, I'm thinking now, I hope my husband is listening, but again, he has some health issues. He's older than me, and I'm thinking now, okay, this is going to be, we've got 41 years together. How am I going to best support him on this journey? And I'm thinking about this now. I don't know if he's going to die in a year or in 10 years, but I'm already starting to process what I need to do to be able to show up for him so that he has. So that I can give him the amazing presence that he's always given me.
And I think we're talking to women, and statistically, we outlive men. So, even without an age difference, that is the reality that we need to consider at some point in time. And if you can put a few ideas in place now before it gets hard.
And make sure that you have the conversations with the people. So, we've had these conversations, my husband and I, and I know exactly what he wants and what he doesn't want. I know what I need to do. We have all of our paperwork in place for the legality and there's nothing worse, and I witnessed this many, many times, than somebody who's dying and the family has not had any discussion whatsoever. They haven't even con you really haven't contemplated the fact that your 96-year-old father might be dying in the future, which is today. And then all of this stuff that hasn't been talked about beforehand has to be talked about in the midst of the greatest feelings and emotions that you've probably ever experienced in your life. And we know we aren't capable of making the best decisions at those times, because our nervous system is being hijacked by these strong emotions. But if you've had these conversations, and if you know clearly, I mean, when my mother-in-law had an aneurysm and the prognosis was not good for her, I knew exactly what to say to the neurologist. This is what she wanted. She wants it so much that she actually has it in writing. And I am here to make sure. Even at that point, that's all I was thinking about. I wasn't letting myself think about the fact that she was going to be gone and how I was going to feel about that. Later on, when she left, yes, I went home and I felt dropped to my knees and fell to the floor and let myself feel it. So have the conversation so that you don't have to make really important decisions, and especially if there's more than one person involved. Because families are, just because we're from the same genetic pool doesn't mean we all think the same and
Complicated.
feel the same, right? So get this stuff taken care of beforehand so that you can show up and really be present for the person that's leaving.
What haven't we talked about? I want to go deeper into the garden, but we won't go there. What haven't we talked about that you want women listening, their mid-age women, to think about in terms of maid and dying and choosing to die?
I think just, I mean, just having this conversation, just listening to us have this conversation, knowing that we're all at one point we're going to die ourselves. So, I mean, who do you want deciding how you're going to die and what that's going to look like? I want it to be me. I'm going to make those decisions beforehand. So, put some thought into this. We put more thought into what movie we're going to choose on Netflix sometimes than we do into, time-wise, than we do into planning our end of life. And no, as women, we are the carrier of the heart, right? So it's a tender, we feel this stuff, and we carry it for other people. Not that we can't help others learn how to carry it for themselves too, but put some forethought into it, I think, is the biggest thing. For me, I think, that I would ask of people. Talk about it with the people that you love, and talk about it with your kids, talk about it with your spouse, talk about it with your parents if they're still alive, with your grandparents, and let them know. I mean, I knew for 4 years that my mom was on a downhill spiral, and I was traveling internationally a lot for work, but I let her know at every chance that I talked to her, every way that she had made my life better. And I those were conscious conversations that I wanted to have. I wanted her to leave knowing that every good thing that she had ever done for me. And the more I focused on that, all the other little angsty things that had tripped us up over the years, they just sort of fell away. I mean, when I first wrote the book, I said to my husband, "This must sound like a fiction book to you. It's a love story to my mother." And I said, "You've witnessed our relationship over the years." But at the end, that's all that was left with was the love. The rest we had sorted out because we consciously decided we were going to do that. And that is the thing. You must consciously, we need to be conscious. I just posted something on Facebook yesterday. If you want your deathbed not to be crowded, live mindfully.
As you were saying that, I thought too, like, because of the joy that came into your face with just knowing that you and your mother's final days, weeks together were accentuating the positive. Is that's what you have now for the next 20, 30, 40, 50 years, whatever you have left on this globe? You've only got the good bits.
Exactly. And my
So,
daughter witnessed this.
okay,
My
yeah.
daughter has now witnessed like what a death can look like. I mean, that's to me, a legacy and a gift that I've given to her.
Yeah. Where do we find you on the World Wide Web?
You find me at Teresa with an H, TheresaE. Evans, EVANS.com. So TeresaEEvans.com. You can find me on Substack under Choosing Death. And you can purchase the ebook directly from my website. And there's links there for other purchase possibilities. It is for sale in Canada and Australia and the UK. I have a blog on there. I try to write once every 2 weeks, just about my thoughts on life and death and mate and family and nature and events that I'm doing. So I feel like my journey for this next phase of my life is to start these conversations with people, to be the catalyst that starts these important conversations.
I wish you would rephrase that and really emphasize the important conversation.
Important
Oh, yeah.
conversations,
Yeah.
yes.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness, because they are so important. You're also on social. I see Facebook,
Yes, I
Instagram, and
have a
TikTok.
very active personal Teresa Evans or Stone Path Press is the name of the entity that I published the book under. So I put self-published this book, and so I need everybody's help in getting the word out. It's a big sea out there. There were 6 million books published last year, and when you're self-publishing, you don't have the benefit of a big house doing the advertising and sending you on a book tour and all this and that. You're doing that all on your own. But I firmly believe that this book is meant to get out there, and it will find its way into the hands of those that need to read it, and that people, I think it's a word of mouth book.
I was just thinking that it's such a gift book too. Like somebody may receive it and
Oh,
go like,
yeah.
"What?" It,
Yes.
maybe an unusual gift, but so important, so very important.
Yes.
Now, I always ask people if I can ask them a personal question before we close. And Lord knows we haven't had any personal conversations at all this. But can I ask you a personal question that is totally unrelated to the last hour? Okay. Our readers don't understand where you hail from, but you are about to go on the Great Canadian Road Trip. Where are you going to stay the longest?
Ooh.
Listeners, Teresa is originally Canadian, is still Canadian.
Yeah. It's got to be the West. It's got to be, I'm gonna stay in, I don't know if I'd stay in Tofino, but I'd definitely hang out there for a while. The mountains. I've always wanted to take that train, that fancy train through the Rockies. Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Although, if I really paused and thought about that, I think I'd want to spend a fair amount of time with my sisters in Ontario.
Okay.
So, it's
All right. It's a road trip, so you can
a
do it
road trip.
all.
Yes.
Okay. So your website link is in the show notes.
Okay.
And all the links will be on your page at our website, including listeners, a buy link. So go do that. Listeners, this is one of those conversations that touches each of us differently. If you'd like to share your thoughts, experiences, or reflections, I'd love to hear from you in the comments. As always, let's keep the conversation respectful and compassionate. If this conversation made you think of a friend, a sibling, caregiver, or family member who may be navigating a similar journey, please consider sharing this episode with them. Sometimes the right conversation arrives exactly when someone needs it. If you're enjoying these conversations about life after 60, the challenges, the opportunities, and the questions we're all figuring out as we go, I invite you to follow the Boomer Woman's podcast wherever you listen. A reminder that I release each episode on Substack on Wednesday evening before it goes live everywhere else. Teresa Evans, thank you for being my guest today, sharing such a personal chapter of your life with honesty, grace, compassion. Your story reminds us that we can't control every part of life's journey, but we can choose how we accompany one another through it. So, I know the conversation is going to help a lot of listeners, and I appreciate that. So, thank you.
Thank you, Agnes. It's been my joy. It's been my joy.
Have a great rest of week.
Yeah.